AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. The grain markets are starting the week with big gains, and traders are looking for planting progress in this afternoon's update to be aggressive. We've got cooler temps on the way. That's not a major problem, but just how active will the weather pattern be? That could be the problem for already wet areas of the Midwest.
Live from the glorious opening ceremonies of the week via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with Machinery Pete Greg Peterson. Then it's RFA President and CEO Jeff Cooper. Later, Stephanie Darnell for Be Sure. Right after the news, Michael Clark from BAMWX. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Boy, we got windows open kind of weather here Northeast Iowa, don't we?
You betcha.
Oh, man, it's gorgeous out there. Gorgeous. Welcome, everyone, to the start of another week. Happy Monday morning. Lots of activity over the weekend, and so much of it was centered on an announcement from India that I'm sure we'll get some of the details on that from Davis here in a moment.
Yep.
The wheat markets, we're not there right now. The July HRW contract, both the July and the September, have traded up the 70-cent daily trading limit. We've still got the July SRW market, which is at about a dollar discount to the HRW market, is trading up the 70-cent daily limit. We've got 50-cent plus gains in spring wheat futures. It's a big, big move in the wheat market. That's got corn trading to the upside, even though, as I said, traders are looking for aggressive progress to be reported in the crop progress report this afternoon. Davis, I saw my first field of corn that has emerged along Highway 136 in western Dubuque County, Iowa, over the weekend, buddy.
We've got some green stripes over here in Grundy County as well, just poking their heads through. I love the look of that. It's one of my favorite times of year.
Yeah, it did not take long for that corn to come up. The corn that you can row right now and is maybe even getting to the third leaf, you know, was planted Mother's Day or maybe on the 9th. Here we are a week later, and a couple of 90-degree days and some mid to upper 80s will get that crop off to a really, really quick start, which is exactly what it looks like is happening out there. All right, buddy, let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Well, Chip, India on Saturday banned most wheat exports to manage domestic food security and prices. The government said it would still allow exports backed by already issued letters of credit and to countries that request supplies, quote, to meet their food security needs. Senior government officials said the ban could be revised. Now, Chip, before the ban, India had aimed to ship a record 10 million metric tons of wheat in 21-22. In April, India exported a record 1.4 million metric tons of wheat, and deals were already signed to export around 1.5 million metric tons in May. In total, Indian tenders had already contracted to export 4.5 million metric tons of wheat this year. Chip?
Yeah, we've been talking about this for some time, that India was indicating that even though they were having, you know, the hottest March and April on record in some of their wheat production areas, they were talking about, no, we're not going to ban anything. I think this has been anticipated for a while, but when you get the kind of price reaction to the story that we're getting today, maybe it wasn't baked into the markets. Obviously it wasn't.
Well, according to the Wall Street Journal, soaring food prices are triggering shortages and protests across the developing world. Late last month, Indonesia halted the export of certain types of palm oil. Rising prices helped stoke violent unrest that led to the resignation of Sri Lanka's prime minister earlier this week and have fanned more peaceful protests in the Middle East. In parts of Africa, Chip, millers have reportedly run out of wheat.
They will not remain peaceful if millers are out of wheat in Africa.
Goldman Sachs has urged companies and consumers to gird for a U.S. recession, saying it's a, quote, very, very high risk. Goldman Sachs have downgraded their 2022 and 23 U.S. growth forecasts. The European Commission, meanwhile, cut its economic growth forecast for the 19 countries sharing the euro to 2.7% this year from 4.0% predicted early in February. Growth is expected to slow in the EU next year as well. NATO's Secretary General said Sunday, quote, Ukraine can win this war. Following an informal meeting of the group, Ukrainian forces have advanced to near the Russian border in recent days after pushing Russian troops from the outskirts of Kharkiv, and evidence is growing that Russia's offensive in the Donbas region is faltering. According to British intelligence officials, U.S. has lost a third of the ground forces it committed to the offensive in Ukraine. President Biden told the leaders of Sweden and Finland that he supports their right to decide whether to join NATO. Meanwhile, Russia cut electricity supplies to Finland from Saturday as tensions mount about the Nordic country's plan to join NATO.
Wow. I mean, I think Finland has the second longest border with Russia, something like that. So this is forcing President Putin's hand. He is getting deeper and deeper in that corner.
Well, Chip, Senator Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island intends to introduce a carbon border adjustment measure within the next 10 days or so, which would seek to impose a fee on imports of energy-intensive goods modeled after the government's social cost of carbon. The policy could win the backing of some Republicans as a way to hit polluting industries that have moved to China. Chip.
Wow, there's the ESG, yep, the environmental social governance impact coming at us again. All right, Davis, hey, thank you, buddy. I appreciate it very much. Talk to you later.
You bet.
All right, let's bring in Michael Clark from BAMWX.com. Good morning, Michael.
Hey, Chip, how are you?
I'm doing great. We have got a gorgeous day started here in Northeast Iowa, but man, there was some wet weather in areas of the Corn Belt over the weekend, wasn't there?
Yeah, plenty of rainfall came down for a lot of people over the weekend, especially in the Eastern Belt, Indiana, Ohio, Michigan, and down through Kentucky had some locally heavy rains of 2 inches or more. It was nice and dry in the Central Plains, though. Iowa, you know, Nebraska, Kansas, Minnesota had a drier weekend, so that was nice.
Yep. Yep. What about the Dakotas? Did they make it through the weekend without much rain?
With the exception of the far northern third of North Dakota, Minot portions west still had rain.
Okay.
And unfortunately, Chip, the forecast there, you know, it's wet. It's wet.
Yeah. So. It sounds like the areas that have been wet are the areas where the rains are expected to continue, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, over the next 7 days in North Dakota, I've got 1 to as much as 3 inches of rain up there in the far northern part of the state. So going to continue to stay active up there for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Now, in that area that you mentioned that is dry, there's been some pop-up showers, but boy, there hasn't been much for an organized pattern of rain across the middle of the country. Any chance of that?
Not really, Chip. This week, relatively dry in the Central Plains down to the panhandles of Oklahoma, Texas. And then week two, I've got that continuing. And a lot of the moisture in week two is very dependent on a tropical storm risk that we're watching in the Gulf of Mexico. If that develops, it could rob a lot of the moisture. So let's watch that.
Gotcha. All right. Hey, Michael, thanks, buddy. Appreciate you. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you.
All right. Okay. That is Michael Clark, BAMWX.com. All right, when we come back, we got to get this week started. It's Monday. That means it's time for a conversation with Machinery Pete. At the bottom of the hour, we got Jeff Cooper from the RFA coming our way. Stay tuned.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
What if your commercial beef herd could be better than you thought possible? Genetic testing can help give you more confidence about what your herd is made of, and more importantly, what it can be. Inherit Select from Zoetis provides data-driven genetic insights to help you make more informed selection, breeding, and culling decisions about your cows and heifers. The journey from genetic potential to reality begins with Inherit Select. Ask a genetics rep how to save on testing with our whole herd promotion. Go to beefgenetics.com/radio.
Machine Repeat here, folks. This segment of AgriTalk brought to you by our friends at Dakota Ag Innovations, makers of Dakota Shine, the best way I've seen to fix faded paint. Go to dakotashine.com or call 888-996-7801.
Welcome back. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you are here. We've got Davis Michelson with us as
Hello.
Well.
Yes.
I just got a text from a buddy that I'm looking at, and it's something that I've got to bring up to Greg Peterson, Machine Repeat. Good morning, Greg. How are you, man?
Hey, I'm doing well, Chip. How are you doing?
I'm doing real fine. We'll get to this text, but first things first, let's get to your pick of the week. Let's hear about it.
Yeah, Saturday down in Tennessee is our pick of the week, Chip. We had a kind of a small sale that had a John Deere 6615 tractor with 1,875 hours on it, sold with a John Deere 740 loader. The sale was in Winchester, Tennessee. I think it was for Drew Payne, and Tradition Auction Services was the auction company. And the thing went for $70,000, which blew away the previous record high auction price, which was $55,000, and was from April of 2010, so just over 12 years ago. So shows you with a 6615, you know, a little over 10 years old there, nice tractor, low hours, but again, $15,000 over the record Saturday.
Man, oh man, when the records are broken, they're not just broken. They're smashed.
Yeah, they're smashed. Yeah, but again, it makes sense. I mean, it's problematic to get the new, you know, the new models, and then there is such a preference for the nice condition older ones with you know, some age on them, and they just don't show up that nice. So when they do, you have a lot of folks that want them.
Yep. And the reason that they want the newer models is, you know, hopefully the parts on this equipment are still functioning and won't break on you, because you don't know if you're going to be able to get the parts.
Right. Parts availability. Yeah. There's a lot of things to think about, but I've definitely seen people looking for those nice condition used units that are reliable like that.
Right. Right. Which gets us to the text that I got from my buddy. Okay. He says the GM at the co-op emailed him, said that they broke the hydraulic cylinder on a John Deere sprayer, not one available in North America.
Yeah, well, that's why I've introduced the word scary into my description of the current equipment market, because, I mean, what do you do?
That co-op's out there trying to buy every sprayer that they can get, that they can find right now, I would imagine.
That's why I just wrote a blog a week ago. We might have talked about it last week, Chip, but you know, the trend I've seen since November, it's really picked up speed of buying used equipment as a hedge. And that's why you need that backup sprayer or whatever, you know. That's the case of a co-op, but it applies to all farmers too. Like, when I gotta go, I gotta go. So you know, if I need something in the bullpen ready and warming up, if that's what I need, that's what I need.
Yeah, exactly. The last half of the text here says he also had to buy an inner tube for his 710 metric on four-wheel drive tractor. And the inner tube, he says, mind you, $400 for the inner tube. He says, LOL, except it ain't funny.
Right. Yeah. Tires. Oh, man. Unbelievable. Well, we have some big news coming here not too long on the tire front, so just stay tuned, folks. But
good.
It's become such a vital piece of the whole used equipment market that the cost and availability, it's amazing.
Okay. All right, very good. All right, availability. You've got some equipment available on the auction tomorrow, right?
Yeah, we do. Our Machine Repeat monthly online auction is tomorrow. Just go to machinerepeat.com, folks. Good variety of equipment on the tractor front. I think we got like 14 models out there. A couple of the eye catchers, of course. We got a 1983 John Deere 4250 out of Colorado, two-wheel drive, 3,494 actual hours on it. That one's going to be hot. Next door in Kansas, we've got a 2015 John Deere 7210R, just under 5,200 hours. Out of the state of Oklahoma, from a good folks at Armitage Equipment, we have a 1991 John Deere 8760, four-wheel drive, 6,612 actual hours on it. Mm-hmm. And then, Chip, if we head out to New Jersey, super low-hour Kubota MX5800 HST, with a loader, only 163 hours on it.
Yeah.
And that same seller also has a little Land Pride 8-foot box blade and a Piqua skid steer trailer. Nice setup there. If you're into the older tractors, folks, there's a pair of 63 John Deere 5010s, barn kept, very nice, one restored. Also Ron Enger from Madison, Minnesota. I think I touched on it last week, but Ron's got a unique tractor. It's a 94 AGCO Alice 9630 two-wheel drive. 5,626 hours on it. Maybe saw the YouTube video I posted. Ron was kind enough to do a little video telling us about it. So very nice tractor there. And so, I should mention some hay equipment on the sale, Chip.
Yeah.
Folks, yep. If you're looking, we got some stuff for you. We got a 2019 John Deere HX15 Batwing mower out of Oklahoma, used once. That's getting a ton of bids. A John Deere 2018 model 348 square baler with 8,500 bales through it, one owner out of Oklahoma. And then also a round baler, 2019 Case IH RB565 with only 643 bales through it. So that's all out from Armitage Equipment out of Oklahoma. Great folks down there and some super nice hay equipment there for you. Sells tomorrow, absolute, no buyer's fee. So machinerypeat.com, right. Check it out.
Right, right. The one that I was looking at that I think is, mm-hmm. it's already seen a lot of action and it's going to see even more action is that 2015 7210R Deere. It's already had 100 bids on it and it's still a heck of a deal.
Yeah, it is. Chance to get a buy. And again, it's 7 years old, good solid tractor. There are tons of pictures and I think even video on that one. So hop on and check it out, folks.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Let's talk a little bit about the big iron auction that happened last week.
Yeah, there was a tractor on the sale on Wednesday, Chip, that caught my attention. It was a 2012 Case IH Magnum 290, 2,869 hours. It was from Gurley, Nebraska. Sold for $157,500. And I knew that was high, but I actually looked and it's the third highest auction price ever on a Magnum 290. Now,
wow.
Here's what's interesting. The record was just set in November. Good folks at Steffes Group had a sale in Purley, Minnesota that had that was a 13 model, 1,547 hours on it. Now that was a 25th anniversary edition, which I think those little anniversary insignias, people laugh. They say they don't add money, but sometimes they do. That brought 167. That's the record. But here's how much things have changed, Chip. The fourth highest price ever. I remember writing about this at the time. It was January 30th of 19. So now we have to get our brains ahead 3 years ago before pandemic and before commodity prices went up. But there was a farm sale in Dunlop, Iowa, where a 14 model Magnum 290 with only 560 hours on it with a Cenex 10-year, 10,000-hour extended warranty. Super nice. Loaded that warranty. It brought 151. Now, what would that bring 3 years later? I mean, like I said, that one up in Purley, Minnesota, 1,547 hours went 167.
Wow.
You know, that 151 3 years ago would have been 175 now.
Yeah. Just the way just it's 3 years ago, the difference that makes.
Yep.
Phenomenal.
You track any market, well, you know, you've been doing it. I mean, things change.
Yep. Yeah. No doubt. All right. What you watching?
I am watching one sale coming up. This is unbelievable. Our great friends at Sullivan Auctioneers, Mark Sullivan texted me Friday. They have us now. This is a little ways out. It's July 26th. It's an online estate auction out of Shawneetown, Illinois. But folks, listen to what's on this sale. A 1994 John Deere 8100 two-wheel drive, 113 one-owner hours. A 2000 John Deere 6410 mechanical front with a 640 loader, 205 one-owner hours. If you like little blue tractors, how about a Ford 1710 two-wheel drive, 592 hours? A 98 case 590 Super L backhoe, 417 hours. And now let's talk pickups. A 1994 GMC 1500 four-wheel drive, 11,255 miles. And if you like Jeeps, they got an 89 Jeep Wrangler with 10,397 miles on it. We're going to film this online auction for our Machine Repeat TV show and feature these items. But again, the sale is July 26th, folks. Just hit SullivanAuctioneers.com and check it out.
Holy smokes. That is one to look forward to right there. Good work, Greg. Thanks, buddy. Don't forget, go to machinerypeat.com. Right at the very top is where you can get to tomorrow's auction. Lots of good equipment there that you want to take a look at. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds great, Chip.
All right, Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. We've got Jeff Cooper from RFA next.
What if your commercial beef herd could be better than you thought possible? Genetic testing can help give you more confidence about what your herd is made of, and more importantly, what it can be. Inherit Select from Zoetis provides data-driven genetic insights to help you make more informed selection, breeding, and culling decisions about your cows and heifers. The journey from genetic potential to reality begins with Inherit Select. Ask a genetics rep how to save on testing with our whole herd promotion. Go to beefgenetics.com/radio.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farm incentive to see if you're eligible.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, Davis and I talked a bit about the announcement over the weekend that India is banning wheat exports to most countries. Big impact on the markets today.
Absolutely. Gapped higher overnight, new multi-year highs in HRW futures, contract highs also in spring wheat futures. And, just across the board, I mean, broad-based buying in the wheat complex, that's spilling over to both the corn and soybean markets. Now, interesting development in the soy complex, meal futures continue to trade higher along with soybeans, but the soy oil market has weakened, and it was trading higher earlier on, but now as I'd call moderate losses, especially in the front end of the market.
Yeah, it's had me looking for some news on Indonesia and if they're starting to filter some palm oil back out into the market. Have you seen anything on that?
I haven't seen anything new on that, but it wouldn't surprise me if something does develop there. You know, we got a lot of moving parts in the world right now in terms of food and veg oils and those types of things. So all kinds of moving parts.
Yeah, absolutely. Corn's trading 12 to 20 cents higher, but take us over to the livestock trade. We're starting the week with some gains in hogs.
Yeah, so Friday had strong corrective gains, and I think that, we're seeing active follow-through this morning. I think this week's price action will be critical in determining if this is nothing more than just a correction after this sharp price plunge, or if it's a start or delayed start of a seasonal rally, and so that should play out over the course of the week here. Live cattle trading to the upside as well and corrective buying. Feeders, they're lower because of the strength in the corn market this morning.
Gotcha. Good stuff, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. We've cleared the schedule for you. Give us a call at 855-482-5524 and join the conversation.
Yeah, you can definitely give us a call, or you can reach out to us on Twitter. Just include hashtag AgriTalk in the message. Email host@agritalk.com. Would love to hear from you. And give me an idea on some of the topics that you would like to hear us address here on AgriTalk. We talk a lot about the renewable fuels industry and what's going on there here on AgriTalk, and we're going to keep the conversation going right now. We've got Jeff Cooper, President and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association. Jeff, welcome back to AgriTalk.
Good morning, Chip. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Glad that you are here because, and actually it was your economist, Scott Richmond, that wrote the blog post, I guess I would call it. Yeah. Last week that really got my attention, but I am really glad that you are here to address it because it's another smear campaign by big oil. And it's just infuriating that they can get away with doing this stuff, Jeff.
Well, it's insane, Chip. And this really all started about 2 weeks ago. I was sitting at home on a Sunday morning watching Meet the Press like I do every Sunday morning. And an ad from the petroleum refiners comes on. And it says the renewable fuel standard is driving up gas prices. And the ad says, you know, we got to push President Biden to fix the RFS to save refinery jobs. And I nearly fell out of my chair because I know what's going on with refining margins right now. And so I did ask Scott Richmond, our chief economist, to take a deeper dive into that whole question. And it's like, are you kidding me? Save refinery jobs? I mean, these guys are making a killing right now, record profit margins for refiners. And it's the same old thing, Chip. I mean, they're trying to divert attention away from the record, you know, the windfall profits they're making and trying to attack the RFS.
Yeah. Yeah. It's another smoke and mirrors campaign. Let's get everybody's attention over here to get their attention off of the RVO announcement, right?
Exactly. We know we got RVO. Yeah, final RVO is coming up soon. They've been doing everything they can to try and convince EPA to reduce those volumes. But again, the argument that they're making on this advertisement that the RFS is somehow causing higher gas prices, I mean, that's laughable. We've got ethanol a dollar cheaper than gasoline today. Ethanol is nearly $2 a gallon cheaper than other octane sources. The renewable fuel standard is saving people money at the pump. All you got to do is go look at any station that's selling E15 or E85 today to see that.
Right, right. Over the weekend, I got to fill up with E15, and it was 20 cents a gallon cheaper than E10. And the E10 was, I don't even remember what the difference was between the E10 and the no ethanol option that was on that pump. But I mean, if E15 or ethanol, or unleaded 88 is 20 cents cheaper than the E10, how can people hear that message from big oil and think that there's even an ounce of truth to it?
Well, and that's the thing. I don't think anybody believes that nonsense. And I think seeing is believing, and there is no better evidence of ethanol's ability to save drivers money right now than again, going to a station that's selling E15. The 20 cent discount that you're seeing is very typical of what we're seeing across the country today. We're seeing some stations selling E15 for 30 or even 40 cents a gallon, less than E10. And in many cases, a dollar a gallon less than E0, the ethanol free gasoline. So again, I think anybody who's really paying attention to this issue knows that they're just getting more nonsense from the oil guys who are trying to hide what's really happening in their industry right now.
Right, right. So Pelosi this week, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi this week is going to ask for a vote in the House on a bill that would give President Biden the authority to declare an emergency and to make it illegal for gas prices to go up.
Yeah.
This seems a little scary to me, Jeff.
Well, it is a little troubling when we have people talking about
price controls.
Yeah, price controls. I mean, that's what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
I think everyone is concerned about the high gas prices we're seeing and where do they stop? But putting price controls in place, I think, is not the answer that we're looking for. You know, there are some elements in this legislation that will be considered that would crack down on price gouging. And some of that, you know, probably deserves some consideration. Again, we got refiners making 40 to 50 cents a gallon in net profits on every gallon of gasoline they're making right now. They're making $1 a gallon. Yeah, wholesale. This is from the refinery gate. $1 a gallon net profit going into their pocket on every gallon of diesel, every gallon of jet fuel they're making. So I do think that's what's happening in the refining sector deserves some attention right now. But there may be other and better ways to address or to try and get a grip on the runaway prices we're seeing right now.
Right, right. Okay. Speaking of the RVOs, the renewable volume obligations, EPA administrator is going to be making, I think, two trips to the Hill this week. The RFS is undoubted. They're going to be talking budget, EPA budget, but there's no doubt that the RFS is and the RVOs are going to be part of the conversation. Any hints as to what Regan might be talking about?
Well, I agree. I think he will certainly get some questions about the RFS and the timing of the RVOs. He's going to be on the Hill tomorrow in the House and in the Senate, like you said, for budget hearings in both chambers. He will certainly get some questions about the RFS, and we expect that his answer will be similar to what we've heard from the administrator in recent weeks, including on your show not too long ago, which is, look, you know, we're going to try and get these RVOs out as quickly as possible. They do have a court-imposed deadline of June 3rd. We expect they may even publish them sooner than that. And we're still expecting a strong statutory volume for 2022. And we're also hoping and expecting to see some upward revisions to the volumes that were proposed for 2020 and 2021. You know, Administrator Regan has been, I think, saying the right things, and we've been pretty, you know, I think positive. We've had a good relationship with this EPA, and we're just looking forward to getting these final rules out the door so the marketplace knows with certainty what's going to be expected the rest of this year.
Right, right. And when it, you know, we got that first wave of small refinery exemption rejections, there's another wave coming. There's still, 60-some requests that are pending?
That's right. There are 65 small refinery exemption petitions that are still undecided. We expect those will be decided on the same day that we get the final RVO rules, because the one is kind of dependent on the other. And we're expecting, Chip, that EPA is going to deny all 65 of those petitions. And unlike what they did, you know, a few months ago, they're not going to say, well, we're denying these, but we're not really going to require the refiners to comply. We think in this case, they're going to deny these petitions, and those refiners that asked for these exemptions will be told, no, you need to comply with your RFS obligations.
Jeff, there's refiners that are short the RIN market then. If they have to comply, they are big time short the RIN market.
They are, and that's why we're seeing RIN prices, at essentially record levels. There's a lot of buying, a lot of activity going on right now, and I think that's a pretty strong indication that refiners and really the entire marketplace expect EPA to follow through with strong RVOs and a denial of those SREs. And again, you know, one could argue, hey, if you got to go out and buy RINs, this is a good time to do it, boys, because you are making money hand over fist and shouldn't have any problem spending a little bit of money on RINs that you should have purchased years ago, or, you know, because you made the choice then to not blend renewable fuels and to buy paper credits instead.
Right, right. Now, with the RIN prices where they're at, the incentive to blend has got to be high right now, isn't it?
It's off the charts, Chip. And like I said, you've got ethanol ethanol is selling for $1.25 a gallon less than gasoline at blending terminals, and that's before you consider the impact of $1.50, $1.60 RIN. And so when you figure all of that into the blending economics equation, there is an unprecedented strong incentive right now to maximize the blending of ethanol. And that's why we're seeing retailers, large and small, just, you know, doing everything they can to figure out how to get more ethanol into the blend. We're seeing lots of interest in E15 right now, even to the point where people aren't necessarily too worried about, you know, the summertime RVP barrier and the way these emergency waivers are going to play out this summer. There's just real strong interest in putting that lower cost fuel in front of consumers at the pump right now.
Yeah, that's the big message right now. But from Administrator Regan's, EPA Administrator Regan's perspective, I sure hope that he stays focused on the environmental benefits when he's talking with lawmakers on the Hill this week.
Well, we do too, and it's I think EPA is coming around on that. We did hear President Biden himself make some pretty strong remarks about ethanol's environmental benefits when he was in Iowa last month. We've seen Administrator Regan kind of clearing up some of the myths that were out there about ethanol and smog. So we're making progress.
Yeah, we are making progress. I can't believe that this segment is over. Jeff, thank you so much, my friend. We will talk with you again soon.
All right. Hey, thanks, Chip.
You bet. Jeff Cooper, President and CEO of the RFA.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farm incentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Find farm equipment on Machinery Pete's May 17th online auction. No reserve, no buyer fees. Start bidding now. Auctions.machinerypete.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you are with us this morning. Deciding how to manage weeds, insects, and diseases that routinely attack crops and landscapes is just one of the many decisions that farmers and applicators have to make each season. And Growing Matters is a coalition of Bayer Crop Sciences, Syngenta, Valent USA, BASF, and Mitsui Chemicals Agro. And the coalition is designed to help you make those decisions when choosing crop protection tools. You've got to consider the effectiveness and the potential impact on the environment. Protecting bees and other wildlife is a major part of good stewardship practices and is why Growing Matters launched the Be Sure campaign. It is an initiative to support growers and applicators in accomplishing this important goal. Stephanie Darnell is a seed treatment stewardship manager at BASF. Stephanie, welcome to AgriTalk.
Thank you.
All right. So, Stephanie, just kind of a general question to start with. Seed treatments are something that many growers are using them. It's one of the most rapidly adopted management practices and techniques that I can remember. Why? What makes it so popular?
So the reason seed treatments are so popular with farmers is that it gives them the advantage of protecting that investment of the seed. So when they're choosing their seed, they're looking at the traits that they need for their farm conditions, and they want to protect that seed in the beginning growing stages of its life. So as that plant is developing, that seed technology, that seed treatment technology is protecting the seed. That is a very sensitive time for a developing plant. You have diseases, you have insects that will attack the seed as it's developing and really give it a good start in the beginning of its life once it's planted.
Yeah, that's really the whole goal here, is to make sure that that crop gets off to a good start. And you want to talk about pinpoint placement of crop protection. It doesn't get any more pinpoint than the seed treatments, right?
That's true. It is a precise application to protect that seed and provide that protection where it is needed around the developing seed.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so when we're using this treated seed at this time of the year with the seed going in the ground, what do farmers need to do to make sure they're being good stewards of the land and the surrounding wildlife?
Well, it's really important for the farmer to be sure to read and follow the directions on that product label for their seed treatment, for their seed that they're putting in the ground. There will be stewardship guidance on how to not only plant their seed, but how to handle it, how to store it, and how to dispose of it.
Okay, so disposing of it. What should farmers do with leftover or unused treated seed?
So when we're talking about small quantities of treated seed that have been left over from a planting, a farmer can return that into the original container, and that information will be on the label. So that, again, they have to make sure they're reading and following those label directions, and that'll give them guidance on the storage of leftover seed. But also on the label, it will tell them that they can do a replanting in areas that potentially didn't have a good stand to begin with, or on the field edges, they can use that small quantity of leftover seed. Now, if it was a larger quantity and they're not able to store it or it's not viable anymore, then they'll need to check with their local and state authorities to find out how to dispose of that seed. And so it's really important that they look into their state recommendations of how to dispose of leftover treated seed.
Yeah. A lot of the information that growers need when they're using that treated seed, it's right there on the label, right, Steph?
Exactly. It is on the label. It gives you guidance on how to store properly, how to plant properly, how to mitigate exposure to themselves in the environment, and even to pollinators. And also, it provides a lot of great information on, you know, the rate that needs to be used if you're talking about a crop protection product, to know how to properly use it.
Right, right. And the using it the right way is so important, because as we started off on the conversation, this is a very popular way of delivering crop protection. And if we don't use it right, if we have too many bad actors in the use of seed treatments out there, all of a sudden we don't have it available to us anymore. And I don't think anybody wants to deal with that, because these seed treatments are delivering the crop protection practices that it's another tool, and we can't lose any tools when it comes to protecting the crop, right?
Agree. We need these innovative tools. This provides a very precise application to protect that seed, give it a great start when you plant your seed for the year. Yeah. It's really important for them to have those tools in the toolbox. They need every advantage they can get when they're dealing with so many different variables, with the weather, you know, with plant stand potential for the year. They want to make sure that their yield has the best possible chance of succeeding for the year.
Right, right. Stephanie, what does it mean to you to be part of the Be Sure campaign through Growing Matters?
The Be Sure campaign is a great way to get that message out about how to steward the products, especially around pollinators. So it's very important to understand how we properly use our products, we store our products, dispose of our products, and we just want to protect the environment that we're putting these products in. We want to protect the growers that are using these products, and we also want to protect our pollinators. So it's a great way to get that message out and really communicate to our growers to be mindful of what they're doing in the heat of the moment of trying to get those plants in the ground, those seeds in the ground. Just a message that is reminding them at the time of what they need to do to properly steward those products.
Excellent, Stephanie. Hey, learn more about the Growing Matters Coalition and the Be Sure campaign at growingmatters.org/be sure. Thank you, Stephanie. That is Stephanie Darnell, Seed Treatment Stewardship Manager at BASF. And thank you so much for listening this morning. Appreciate it. You got to come back this afternoon. It's going to be a lot of fun. We've got Tommy Grisafi from Advanced Trading right here on AgriTalk.